And now, John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Michael Bloomberg. Sponsored by the Heart Institute of Staten Island. Don't let your heart skip a beat.
And here we go, the Friday edition of the John Gambling Show, which includes Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, welcome aboard. Good morning to you.
Good morning. A little bit nippy outside.
Well,
this morning.
You know, you're going to take credit for the cold weather. I mean, you usually take care of it when it's nice.
Deliberately doing this for the holiday season helps people that sell coats and that sort of thing. Put you in a holiday mood
for
December.
Saw you at the tree lighting the other evening.
It was very nice. LEDs, 33,000 of them.
Plus photovoltaics on the roof.
Absolutely. It's sun generated. Now, how they get the electricity to be there at night, they store it's the answer.
Well, they really went to battery storage.
I have no idea if you really want to know. Okay. Maybe just put it in, use it during the day, and use a different one at night. It's the same thing. An electron's an electron. Let's not. But, no, it's very nice. Radio City Music Hall does, Rockefeller Center does a spectacular job.
All right.
And they have the Rockettes dancing.
Absolutely. They had a whole thing.
How can
going
they
on
do?
There.
How can they get their legs up in the air like that? And they all do it at the same time. It's amazing.
Don't ask questions like that. Come on. You know better than they ask.
I remember
like
as a young kid, there was a girl from next door who came to New York to be a Rockette. It was the first time I heard.
And
I was
do you remember whether or not she made it?
Oh, yeah. She got a job.
Elite.
Yeah, no, she had a job. Her family lived next door for many years. I think they were all gone now. She's still around. She was a little bit older than me.
Tell me, one of the news stories this morning, you having breakfast or coffee at least with Barack Obama?
I have breakfast in Greek diners all over the town all the time. Food
was
very good.
You just happened to run into him at the diner?
You never know. People from Illinois come to New York. It's a great place to visit. We had 45 million tourists this year, and I'm sure he was just here. Maybe goes to see the Christmas tree, patronize some of our stores. It was very nice. Yes, I had breakfast with him.
And did we talk about campaigning? And
no, I said to him, how's it going out there? And we laughed. The schedules for anybody in elected office, particularly if you're on the campaign. And I remember when I was campaigning, you try to do your job, which he still got a job as senator, do that and campaign at the same time. And I remember when I was trying to campaign and be mayor, and you have to separate the two. But we talked about the things that, I really feel very strongly about that Washington can make a difference, whether you're president of the United States or a senator. Public education. And in all fairness to Obama, I don't know that he's quite as far there as I would like him to be, but he, and I gave him credit when I had a talk out in St. Louis to the Urban League for holding or incenting teachers to do a better job with more compensation. You can call it performance pay or anything else. But I think he does understand. We talked about people that don't like testing, our kids are going to go through some very important tests in their life. Do you do drugs? Do you hang out with the wrong crowd? Premarital sex, getting married, quitting school. There's a lot of challenges, and those are the tests that really matter, and they're high-stakes tests. So testing a kid as to whether they can read and write or do arithmetic is nothing wrong, and he's really is into improving public schools. He's on Homeland Security. I testified for him. The first time I met him, he introduced himself to me. We got off the Senate. There's a train between the different Senate office buildings underground.
Yes.
And he just, knew who he was, but I'd never met him before. He got off and he introduced himself. And then I testified before him, and I made the case, as I've done with everybody in Homeland Security. I've done the same thing with Hillary, incidentally, is that Homeland Security monies should be given out based on need, not politics. We discussed the politics of that a little bit. Environment. I'm going to Bali, as you know, to give a speech on the environment and how important that is, and the economy. And you wanted my views on what's like in New York. And that was the gist of the conversation. The eggs were great, and he picked up the tab. It was great.
It's a home run. How do you feel about the federal government's role in education? No Child Left Behind, probably one of the biggest federal moves in a long time.
I've given Bush credit for this. I don't think he's gone as far in everything he's done on education. I don't necessarily agree with, but George Bush has taken this on as an issue, which I wish more people would do.
The pros and cons to this, aren't they?
I don't think the country wants, and that's probably right, you don't want necessarily national testing, although, because if you did, all that would happen is you'd dumb everything down to the lowest common denominator. And the objective is not to get the kids up to a level. and then say, no reason to do any more. We live in a very competitive world, and the world's changing, and we've got to constantly improve all the scores. And that's incidentally why you'll see a lot of the that's why we don't have cell phones in school.
Exactly
right
so.
There, John.
Exactly
I'll rest my
so.
Case. I hope you're on the right
that's
side
my,
of this issue.
I hope so as well.
if you weren't, you are now. I think it is just so important to influence the federal level. If you don't have national testing, but we all have to keep raising standards. I was going to say when your phone went off and distracted me.
My apologies.
That's quite all right. I'll get over it. I'm sure all your listeners will be calling in. The phones are ringing off the hook right now already. There it is again. Why just turn it off?
You mean like this?
That the power off, yeah, and then you don't have the problem anymore. Or can't you turn it to vibrate?
Well, I can, but not while it was ringing. It won't do that.
Well,
there it goes. It's off now.
Yeah, that makes a terrible noise. The federal government can give money to encourage states to do things. They don't insist on tests. You don't have to comply, but if you want their money, you have to do that. And one of the things we did in grading the schools in New York City was that we didn't measure. Well, it's not fair. Most of a big, very big part of the grade was not measuring how well the kids are doing today. It was measuring how much progress they've made in the last year. And Barack Obama and I talked about that this morning because, you know, you can have a school where the kids get 800 on the college boards. And just because they get 800 on the college board, that doesn't make that a great school. It may just be that they have great kids that go there. If you 800 College Board kids keep advancing and taking tougher courses and moving up, that is a great school. And so one measure of schools may be how well the kids are doing today, but a very important measure is how far they've come. And so a school where the teachers and the principal have a bunch of kids who have been neglected since they were born and are way behind, if they take them from being 3 years behind average to being 1 year behind average, in 1 year. That's impressive. And that's a school that really gets a higher grade.
The federal program at the moment does not do that.
Federal government, fundamentally a federal program, they set a standard of competency and say you've got to get up to that, and after that, you've done a great job, relax. And I don't think we want to relax with our kids. I think you want to constantly raise the bar and have them work harder, because the real world is constantly raising the bar out there, and the people that they're going to have to compete with for jobs when they become adults is constantly raising the bar. It was Bill Bennett many years ago once said to me, you'll never have national testing. And I said, why? He said, because the Republicans don't want anything with the word national in it, and the Democrats don't want anything with the word testing in it. And Bill Bennett's a very smart guy. But we have to do something. Nationally, it's federal money, so the states can opt out. But if they want the money, we should have tougher and tougher standards. And we're all in this together. The people who, and we all do have an interest in each other's education. Remember, those are the people who are going to vote when you're retired. They're the people that's going to fund your Social Security and vote the laws.
Oh, yeah, no, we've got to have people that can compete in the world economy.
Anyway, so the breakfast was very nice, and he understands the issues, and, I wished him well.
He probably had something else to do.
He does have a full-time job.
I understand. Hang on, Mr. Mayor. We'll get right back to you in just a second at 77 WABC. We continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg on a Friday in New York City. We're talking about schools. Let's
U.S. News and World Report lists the top 100 high schools in the country, and six are from New York City.
Well, public congratulations
schools.
To those six.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, Stuyvesant and Bronx High School of Science and Staten Island Tech, Brooklyn Tech, Townsend Harris High School, and New Explorations, Science, Tech, and Math.
Now, my guess is
all public schools in New York City.
A different equation than the city used, that Joel Klein used to evaluate them.
You'd see all these schools. They'd be A or B. They could be a B because they haven't improved, although they would argue it's harder to improve when you're up near the top, and that's true. But that's the job.
Exactly so. Is the class size issue a bogus one?
I think the science is that smaller class size seems to make a difference in the elementary grades, but becomes a lot less important as kids get into the middle schools and into high schools.
I remember in college just huge lectures where you had hundreds of people.
And common sense says that if you had a class size of one, it was just you and the teacher, that you'd learn more. But the evidence is mixed. Nevertheless, it's one of these things that everybody thinks, you know, my instincts too, you want to have smaller class sizes. And we have reduced class sizes over the last few years. They've come down one or two, which is significant if you have 25 kids, is a decent percentage. The problem we have in this city is that we don't have enough classrooms for the kids we have at current class size. And so we are building as fast as we can. We have a $13.5 billion budget, half money from the state, thank you to the legislature and the governor, half the money from the city, and thank you, city taxpayers. And we put together a program, but a lot of it is renovating existing schools. The city school system, I think the average school is like 63 years old. There are a lot of schools that don't have athletic facilities on a day when we really do need them because kids are facing an obesity problem here. They don't have good lunchrooms to serve healthy food. They don't have enough libraries and other things. And, you know, they don't have the laboratories that you need for this technological day. So a lot of it is just renovating and then building new ones. Building high schools and elementary schools and middle schools is hard. Everybody wants more schools. Nobody wants them in their neighborhoods. Siting them is always controversial. But we are increasing the number of classes, the number of classrooms significantly, and reducing class sizes a little. And the reason you're not getting a significant reduction in class sizes is people aren't leaving the city. As the schools get better, as the schools get better, the population's getting bigger, people are willing to keep their kids in school in the city. And so that's, you know, these are what I call problems of successes. Too little housing, too much traffic, too few classrooms in the public schools are things. They're enormously serious. We have to really focus on them. But they are good problems to have. There are a lot of cities that don't have those problems, and that's not better.
And, of course, when it comes to crime, and I don't want to get into this, but, I mean, the crime stats in New York City are just enormous compared to, I mean,
well, you know, every day you wake up and you pray nothing bad happened overnight. But so far, crime continues to come down. The police commissioner, Ray Kelly's done a great job. His staff, the police officers, we have a smaller police staff than we had before because for economic reasons, and yet they keep bringing crime down. You know, size of the classroom, of number of students in class, or number of cops in the beat aren't the only determinants of how you succeed. And I think the NYPD has shown that, you can, with a smaller police force, do an even better job. Now, there's a limit where if you keep reducing the size of the police department,
the curves cross.
Right. At the moment, however, we are we are able to recruit even with a bad pay schedule where we don't pay the newer cops enough. We're able to recruit enough to keep the size of the police department constant. It's been that way since for the last 5 years. We reduced it about 2,000 or 3,000 cops when I first came in because we just didn't have the money. And since then, and retirements are running at a couple percent in the police department because it's a great job. People, most cops want to be with the best, and there's no question this is the best.
Peter Vallone of the city council put up a non-binding resolution this week about homework, too much being given out in schools.
Yes. My Spanish teacher was complaining yesterday that I haven't been doing my homework, as a matter of fact. There just never seems to be enough time.
It was a fascinating conversation on the radio here with the listeners. It was
I made a joke about it. Peter Vallone really is a classy guy and is really trying to, you know, address some issues as he sees them. He's got two young kids in public schools, I think. The bottom line is our kids, I don't think they have too little homework. I think they spend too much time in front of the television and the computer. You know, it'd be one thing if they're using the computer to learn something, but generally kids use computers. Let's get serious. Playing video games or going on MySpace, YouTube, things like that. And you don't learn anything that's really useful compared to what you could have done with that time. We want to make sure our kids get out. If you're a parent, you got to get your kid out playing outside every day.
That's one of the issues Vallone was talking about.
I think that he's right there. Do the teachers give them too much homework? You know, we used to complain that the Japanese were going to take over the world because their kids studied 25 hours a day. I could never figure out how you did that, but they studied 20. And it turns out that that's not intelligent either. There is a limit to how much homework. And if it's a third grader, it's very different than if you're an 11th grader. But 11th graders have to learn, like you and George and I, you're going to have to work very hard once you get out there, and this is practice.
That's exactly what it is. It's practice for the rest of your life. Mr. Mayor, hang on here. Let's take a half-hour break. Don't forget that before we finish up at 11 o'clock, we'll take your phone calls and your questions, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-WABC. Be right back. George Weber's got some more. George?
All right, John.
John Gambling with you here at 77 WABC, along with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Were you distressed at the pictures of the president in the New York Library, the mugshots?
I haven't been to see it, but, it is, this is the kind of stuff that some people find freedom of the press or First Amendment. Some people find it distasteful. I think it has a lot to do with whether you are.
Your politics.
Your politics, mm-hmm. Sure. You're a George Bush fan or not or whomever. I'll let the library decide what's appropriate to show and
leave that decision to somebody else.
Yeah, but I'll tell you a decision I'm not going to leave to somebody else. I am sure you're going to do this. You are going to Harlem for the holidays. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
I knew you would.
I just need to know when it is.
I want to work this in right now. You gave me the perfect segue. Starting tomorrow through December 24th, there's 100 participating retailers and restaurants that are giving discounts. Up in Harlem, and the whole idea is a promotion to bring business to Harlem.
Sure.
Starts off with tomorrow at the Nubian Heritage Marketplace on Fifth Avenue. They have a community event, lots of things for kids and that sort of thing. And so you can go to Harlem for the holidays as well as going home for the holidays.
And Harlem is on fire, and I don't mean that literally. I mean that figuratively from an economic
you
standpoint.
You go across 125th Street, there's almost no empty stores. That's very different. The streets are clean. Crime is way down in Harlem. The schools are way better. And housing prices are way up, which is not good for the people living there. But they're up because a lot of people do want to live there. Yeah, it's really changed.
Other good economic news, Broadway, the footlights are back up.
Footlights are back up. And, the people that got hurt here were the stores and restaurants in the theater district and the people that worked in the theater or invested in plays or owned the theaters. Now, to some extent, some people still ate in those restaurants. To some extent, some of the people that work on Broadway have other jobs. It's, one of these careers that, particularly for actors and actresses, you go in and out, and so you always have to have something else to do as long as you want to keep eating every day. But it was sad, and I'm glad they worked it out. They worked it out themselves. Everybody said, the government should come in and demand this. You can't. The government doesn't have the legal right to do it, number one. And number two, I think that's wrong. I think that the public and private sector has a right to withhold and services if they don't get paid for it, and people don't have to employ them. And I thought you saw here a perfect example of two groups sitting down across the table. It took them a few weeks, but they negotiated a deal that they both think, I'm sure, is not perfect. It's not everything they wanted, but it's a good compromise and something they can both live with. And I've said that repeatedly with the unions that we negotiate with in the city. I've always thought if you sit down, look each other in the eye, you can come up to an agreement, not perfect, but better than any third party would ever force on you.
It always seems to me in whatever strike situation, I wonder why after it's all finished and said and done, why the same outcome could not have been accomplished while everybody continued to work and do what they do.
There's a pressure.
I guess they have to reach a point of pain at some point.
Yeah, I mean, there's a cycle. You know, when you're doing a negotiation, it goes on for a while, and then you just sort of everybody comes to the realization it's time to put it together. And you say, well, why couldn't you have done that before? Well, should have, would have, and could have. You can't run your life that way. Sometimes the times to come together occur before a work stoppage. In the case of labor negotiations, sometimes afterwards. When two companies try to negotiate a business deal, sometimes they get it done easily, quickly, sometimes not. Has a lot to do with an alignment of the stars, what you had for dinner last night. But all kidding aside, I think I've always joked that the ways to get two sides together is you put the both parties into a room with a big pot of coffee and no bathroom, and then you lock the door. And
settlement will come very quickly.
Don't let them out until they come to an agreement.
We should try that sometime and see what happens. Interesting, the city council throws all sorts of ideas about, and one of them has been, there are a number of people on that council that would like to have term limits taken away. And I'm just curious whether, I know how you feel about term limits, but would you like to run a third time?
No.
No.
No. I mean, I am a believer that a new person can do it better. I think that it's very easy to think that things aren't going to, that your successor can't do a better job. I think anybody that has pride will always worry about their successor. But my experience in the past has been that many times successors do a better job than not always. You know, I have the greatest job in the world. Make no mistake about it. I love every minute of it. And I plan to serve as mayor for another 62 days, whatever it is left to go. The public wants term limits. And so whether I want it or not, and supposing you change your mind, doesn't make any difference. Public has twice voted for term limits. And there is a theory that the city council could change term limits themselves. The way the law was drafted, our corporation council said it's not clear. I'm sure there would be a court challenge. And maybe we should put something on the ballot.
But
I don't know if we should put it on to end term limits. We should put it on the ballot to clear up that little loophole and say absolutely no ability for anybody to change term limits unless the public does. If the public wants to change term limits, that's what democracy is all about. And so, you know, if the public really wanted a referendum on it, I'd be hard-pressed to not give them a referendum. If they change term limits, there was an editorial today that said do it separately for the mayor and the city council. Maybe you want to have three questions, the mayor, other citywide offices, and the city council. The public may feel differently about it. There is an argument that for a citywide office, particularly for the mayor, there's enough visibility. People know who they're voting for, whereas for legislators, whether it's at a city, state, or federal level, a lot fewer people know who they're voting for. And so it's not, to say it's not democratic, technically it is, but in a practical sense, there isn't as much choice. It's typically the machine candidate that gets in. And that's the argument for term limits. The argument against term limits is if the public wants to have somebody there, whether you like that person or not, that's the public's choice. That they voted for him. Although that assumes perfect information and everybody being having gotten a good education as a kid,
and
so that they can make
intelligent, an equal playing field,
and
which is
right,
all
of that sort of stuff. So, you know, there's nothing perfect, but I'd think long and hard about whether or not we need to clean up some of the language, but I think the public's spoken twice here, and unless there's enormous outcry.
I have come 180 degrees. Term limits, we need to get it on the legislature's side of the question, again, state and federal.
There are very, very separate arguments as to the advisability of term limits on legislators as opposed to the executive branch. The public has voted out presidents. You know, George Bush, 41, served one term. You know, you've got Jimmy Carter. I mean, there are people who have not gotten reelected. In the case of mayors, there are mayors who didn't get reelected running when they, you know, for another term, whether it was for a fourth term in one case or a second term in one case. So the public really does seem to be more demanding in the executive branch, and when they don't like somebody, there is turnover, whereas in the legislative branch, it's the percentage of federal, state, and city legislators who don't get reelected is so small that you really have a hard time making a case that it's a conscious decision on the public.
All right, here's the big question of the day. Horse-drawn carriages. Stay or go?
Stay.
Done. Okay.
No,
I think that's
it's
great.
It's a tourist thing. Yeah. The ASPCA checks and the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene checks to make sure the horses are taken care of safely and There's no reason not to have horse-drawn carriages. And incidentally, there's no reason not to have more pedicabs. Although the city council passed a bill limiting it, I vetoed it. They overrode my veto. These are things that the tourists like and New Yorkers like, and they define a city. And, you know, does it hold up traffic? Yes, okay. Everything holds up traffic. Come on.
Now, you would not impose congestion pricing on horse-drawn carriages.
To get it through Albany, that was the compromise I had to make. I would sell them down the river this instant. Yes, there's no.
You heard it here.
You
first,
can make the case that a horse-drawn carriage should pay a fee. You can make a case that pedicab should pay a fee. I don't think I have a big problem with that. I'll now have the pedicab industry and the horse industry picketing me. I think everybody should share in the pain, but I don't think you should limit the number of pedicabs. Let the marketplace do that. I don't think you should limit the number of horse-drawn carriages. Let the marketplace do that. There's reasons to insist on insurance and traffic regulations and taking care of the horses and safety and all of those things. No problem. But let them have, the public wants them, let them have them.
I saw a story the other day, and this was, I think, around Thanksgiving or just shortly thereafter, about hunger in New York City. Those that are using soup kitchens and other facilities, and that the city was going to kick in a little bit more money.
Yeah, we put another $1 million in, and I've actually given some more money out of my foundation to a couple of soup kitchens that really do great work.
Does this have to do with the cost of food, or are there more people on the street that are hungry?
It's hard to answer. There are fewer people in homeless shelters. It's one of these things that it's hard to measure, because the easier it is to get a service and the better the service, the more people will avail themselves of. So if you make delivery of a service better and that quality of that service better, more people use it, then you say, you see, we needed it more. What is clear is that there are some people who are hungry. And we should do something about that. We as a society shouldn't let anybody be hungry go hungry. Now, I have no problems in making people that get food work if they are able-bodied. I've always thought those just shouldn't be a free lunch. There are people, incidentally, who can't work. And nobody suggests that they should starve or they should sleep on the streets. That's that fine balance. You want to eliminate corruption in the delivery of these services. You want to make them as efficient as you can. You want to give them, to the extent possible, the DOE Fund run by George and Heather McDonald, which I think is one of the great organizations in the city in helping people. They have a slogan, give people a hand up rather than a hand out. And I think that's as good a slogan for a guiding principle for helping those in need. Now, keep in mind, as I said before, there are some people who just been dealt such a bad hand, they're not going to get a job. They have mental problems and physical problems and drug problems and alcohol problems. And just, you know, they weren't lucky like you and me. So we can afford to help those people as well. But as a general prescription, I'm very much in favor of, you know, we'll give you a hand up rather than a hand out, and you're going to have to work for it.
Good deal. Stick around, Mr. Mayor. Questions come from the audience. 1-800-848-WABC when we return. We are back here on the John Gambling Show, and it's your turn. 1-800-848-WABC, your turn to ask the questions. We're going to start with Winnie out in Brooklyn. Hello, Winnie.
Good morning, everyone. It's wonderful listening to you.
Thank you.
Mayor Bloomberg, I'm an older person. I was in a class of 64, all through grammar school. I graduated, we learned. There was order in the classroom, respect for the teacher. And I feel today that's lacking. And they also have to be surrogate parents. They have to teach so much more than just educational,
Winnie, what's the question behind this?
Well, they said I could make a statement, too. I mean, does class size, is that just the only thing
Winnie,
that really
Winnie, I
is
happen
important?
To agree with you. I think things are different than when you and I went to school. I am a little bit older than you, about 4 or 5 years probably. And, I remember, although my mother constantly reminds me the good old days were never the good old days, but I do remember having more respect for teachers than it seems to me kids have today, although plenty of kids respect plenty of teachers. It's not perfect. I remember crossing there was a police officer assigned at the corner to cross the stop traffic when kids cross the street on the ways to school. And you would address the police officer as officer or sir. I still talk to my mother's friends to the extent that they're still alive. Keep in mind, she's 98, so not a lot. But I would address them as Mr. and Mrs., even though I'm 65. Mm-hmm. Things are different. And remember also, Winnie, what's another change in our society from when you and I were kids, the number of two-parent families has diminished dramatically. I think it's something like less than 50%, some number like that, of kids grow up in two-parent households. And today, both of those parents, in many cases, are working. Now, when I was a kid, there was one kid up the street whose mother worked as well as his father, and it was the only one in the in the neighborhood where there wasn't a mother at home and the father. So it was much more of the Norman Rockwell kind of thing. Today, the kids are dealt a different hand. The one parent or no parents, the parents aren't home, they're working. Tougher to keep everything together. So the guidance at home isn't as much as you would like. And the teachers have had to step in. And you're exactly right. Teachers today, I think, have a much tougher job than they did before.
I see families sometimes where the child is, you know, these are, I'm going to say, young teenagers or old adolescents, and they're swearing. I mean, they're using swear words with their parents around and not being, you know, punished for it and or rebuked for it.
Look, I mean, we can sit here and complain about it. We can try to do something about it. What we're trying to do is to make the school system better and work with parents, young parents and older parents to, you know, realize they've got the kids more than the teachers do.
All right, Winnie, thank you for the telephone call. Let's go to Bill in Queens. You've got the ear of the mayor, Bill. Go.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
My question is in regards to the city marshals. Are you confident that the Department of Investigation is no longer being influenced or directed by outside politics in the hiring and denial for the position?
You know, I'm not so familiar with the marshals. Marshals are it's a funny breed apart in the sense that marshals go and they enforce certain things and do things like the sheriffs do things. Who would have thought we have sheriffs in this day and age? The Department of Investigations, DOI, has been run since I came into office by a woman, Rose Gilhern, who is probably the most scrupulously honest person I have ever met in my entire life. And she is brilliant and she is hardworking. Her father, actually, and she gets it, I'm sure, from her mother as well, but her father's a friend of mine. Her father is chairman of the board, I think, of the Battery Park City. Authority, and Jim Gill is a father. He's an old friend of Ed Koch's, an old friend of Cardinal Cook's, and Rose gets his work ethic from him, and she is scrupulously honest, scrupulously, as is the rest of that department.
All right, thanks a lot for the phone call. Ray out in Staten Island, your question for the mayor, go fast, please.
How are you? Good morning. I read early in the week that the mayor thinks that the only workers who responded in the first 24 hours at 9/11 were the workers who acquired the problems from the toxins down there. As he knows, the fires burned on that pile for weeks.
Yeah, no, and, Ray, I don't know where you get that. It's that I couldn't disagree more with that statement. The issue came about from the medical examiner having to rule the legal definition of homicide versus what they non-homicide, if you will, and people that were killed on that day at that site were ruled homicide. The others are not homicide. And that has nothing to do with whether they got sick from breathing the air at 9/11. You can never point and say one person did or did not, but there's no question an awful lot of people got very badly sick from working down there and breathing that air. And hopefully the pension boards and everything else will take care of it. And we are going to, in fact, at the World Trade Center Memorial, have a special place to a plaque that we can add people's name to. Because remember, you're going to have people for the next 30 years dying from something caused by back then. But it was the story in the paper was about the medical examiner ruling on what is legally a homicide. He has to work within the law. That's what he did. The people that want to politicize it, and we can't allow that to happen.
See you next Friday. Time's
looking
up here.
To it.
Thank you. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here this morning. Stick around.